भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, Text 25. Suta Uvacha Yudhisthira Tat Akarnya Shayanam Sharapanjare Aprichat Vividhan Dharman Rishinam Cha Anushrinvatam Sutuvacha Yudhisthirastarakarnya Shayanam Sharapanjare Aprichat Vividhan Dharman Rishinam Chanushrinvitam Sutuvacha Sri Suta Goswami said, Yudhisthira, King Yudhisthira, taught that Akarnya, hearing, Shayanam, lying down, Sarapanjare, on the bed of arrows. Apriksha asked, Vividan, multifarious. Dharman, duties. Rishinam, of the rishis. Cha, and Anushrinvatam, hearing after. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishma Dev speak in that appealing tone, asked him in the presence of all the great rishis about the essential principles of various religious duties. Purport. Bhishma Dev, speaking in that appealing tone, convinced Maharaj Yudhisthira that he was very soon passing away. And Maharaj Yudhisthira was inspired by Lord Sri Krishna to ask him of the principles of religion. Lord Sri Krishna inspired Maharaj Yudhisthira to ask Bhishma Dev in the presence of many great sages, indicating thereby that the Lord's devotee like Bhishma Dev, although apparently living as a worldly man, is far superior to many great sages, even Vyasadeva. Another point is that Bhishma Dev at that time was not only lying on a deathbed of arrows, but was greatly aggrieved because of that state. One should not have asked him any question at that time, but Lord Sri Krishna wanted to prove that his pure devotees are always sound in body and mind by dint of spiritual enlightenment. And thus, in any circumstances, a devotee of the Lord is in perfect order to speak of the right way of life. Yudhisthira also preferred to solve his problematic questions by asking Bhishma Dev rather than ask anyone else present there who was seemingly more learned than Bhishma Dev. This is all due to the arrangement of the great wheel carrier Lord Sri Krishna, who establishes the glories of his devotees. The father likes to see the son become more famous than himself. The Lord declares very emphatically that worship of his devotee is more valuable than the worship of the Lord himself. Om Agana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Bhishma Dev has here finally convinced Yudhisthira Maharaj that he means serious business. He's leaving. He's departing this world. It is always a very traumatic and extraordinarily emotional situation to learn that an extraordinary devotee of the Lord is leaving this world. Maharaj Yudhisthira, as we can recall, was feeling great difficulty in accepting the throne. He was blaming himself for all the havoc that he saw after the battle of the Kurukshetra. He was feeling that he was very sinful and that he was very selfish to push on all that fighting just so he could be king. And as we remember, no one could convince Yudhisthira Maharaj otherwise, not even Krishna, by Krishna's arrangement. So they're all gathering before Bhishmadev, all the Pandavas, Krishna himself, and great sages and rishis have arrived from all over the universe to witness the departure of Bhishmadev. Now, try to understand Yudhisthira's position. He knew Bhishmadev had the benediction that he would not die unless he wanted to. So, Bhishmadev is firmly but very eloquently letting Yudhisthira know, I'm leaving this world. You have to carry on the religious principles, dharma. How does Bhishmadev firmly convince Yudhisthira of that? He's saying, that Lord who is equal to everyone still is personally appearing before me as I'm about to leave my body. In other words, don't make any mistake. Krishna is here. I'm taking advantage of this moment. I'm going. May my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face with eyes as red as the rising sun is smiling, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this material body. So Bhishmadev is leaving no doubts. He's telling you this, dear, I'm going. You have to take the responsibility. Right now, I'm just wanting to be absorbed in the beauty of Krishna's body. Now, if Krishna has a material body, why would such a great personality as Bhishmadev be so eager to focus on that form? He's comparing Krishna's eyes to be as red as the rising sun. I don't know if in California, sometimes when the sun rises in the morning, it turns the sky a very beautiful red. In some countries, in New Zealand, it's very beautiful like that. And then you can see why Krishna is called Aruna Lochan, eyes red like the rising sun. So Bhishmadev is stimulating your appreciation, your transcendental love of Krishna. As you may recall from Nectar Devotion, there are various stimulations of ecstatic love of Godhead. And Krishna's body is one of them. Krishna's flute, his buffalo horn, his dress, his garlands, even his footprints. When Akrura was on his way to Vrindavan, being sent by Kamsa to fetch Krishna and Balaram, when he saw Krishna's footprints on the ground, he jumped off his chariot and began to roll in the footprints. Now, who do you know that you'll do that for? The gopis, after Krishna disappeared from the rasa dance site, they, just by studying Krishna's footprints, were able to figure out what was going on. That there was a very dear gopi who Krishna kept with him, and they said, here's the spot. We can tell by looking at the footprints that Krishna, he stood upwards to pick something and give it to this gopi. And we can also tell by the footprints that she asked Krishna, please, you just carry me, I'm tired. And now we can tell by looking at the footprints that although Krishna agreed, he left her because she was proud, just like we became proud. So they knew all this just by studying Krishna's footprints. The acharyas say that in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, they never trample on Krishna's footprints. Even the animals, they don't walk over Krishna's footprints. So these are some stimulations of ecstatic love of Godhead. Krishna's buffalo horn. Once Krishna wanted to go on an early morning picnic in the forest. So as soon as he wakes up, he takes his buffalo horn, It's got bands of gold around it and a hole in the middle. He plays his buffalo horn. And what happens? Countless cowherd boys assemble at his front door. And each of the countless cowherd boys has a huge herd of cows. And then Krishna calls for his own herd of cows, which is unlimited. So naturally, the speculator wonders, how is all this fitting in Vrindavan? But Vrindavan is not a material place. It is the expansion of Krishna's own potency. So the Lord and all his unlimited cowherd boys and their huge herds, and the Lord's own unlimited herd, they all go to the forest, all signaled by Krishna's buffalo horn. This morning, we're having a picnic breakfast in the forest. Krishna's flute is also stimulation for ecstatic love. We were hearing yesterday during the reading that when Krishna played his flute, the gopis all ran to the forest in the middle of the night. And as soon as they got there, Krishna just played innocent, like, what are you doing here? What's going on? Why are you out here in the forest in the middle of the night? It's full of ferocious animals. You're just ladies. And what about your husbands and your families and your fathers and brothers? How can you do this? So the gopis, they were a little disturbed. They began looking around at the forest. And Krishna said, oh, now I understand. You came out here just to look at the beauty of the forest. Okay, now you've seen the beauty of the forest. You can go home. So, all that was enacted by Krishna's flute. There are so many wonderful features of Krishna to arouse our love. Just like this material world is an arousal. This is what's giving us problems. Our senses are constantly being agitated by the material world. That's our main complaint against materialistic society. It's not that we're a bunch of fanatics who say, oh, the material world is a horrible place, society is all rotten. No, we understand scientifically what the problem is. That everything in the material world is constructed to drag you down. That is the problem. Everywhere you look, everywhere you smell, any time any of your senses interacts with society today, there's a cause for fall down. That means we are not living in civilization. A real civilization orders life so that people can have a chance to control their senses. But you can see today, living here in Los Angeles, that it is impossible for people to control their senses by the arrangement of the society they live in. Impossible. Some of the guests who come here for Gita class in the evening, and you should all know, you have a very distinctive advantage here. I have not seen such a temple where you get such high-quality guests coming in the evening to hear Bhagavad Gita. They come and sit on the floor and want to hear Bhagavad Gita. And if you ever bother to talk to them and ask them questions, you'll find they're very special people. So, I asked them. They think they're coming here to hear, and they can ask questions, but I always ask them questions. How does it feel living in the material world? And they say things like, as you heard last night, some of you, the pressure. So what kind of pressure? Can you tell us? Because sometimes our own devotees, they've forgotten these things. So tell us about the pressure. Oh, there's pressure from family. There's pressure from society. There's pressure even from your friends. So they're feeling the life in the desert. They're feeling totally thirsty. They've come here for refreshment. Because the society that they've identified with is totally dedicated to agitating their senses. There's no hope living in such a society. So you have to choose. What will you be agitated by? Are you going to be stimulated and agitated by things in relation to Krishna? Or are you going to be agitated by materialistic society? Everyone has to make that choice. So Krishna consciousness is the culture of stimulation for Krishna. We should never forget that our purpose here is to go back to Godhead. And the amazing thing is that right here, within this special section of Los Angeles, you can go back to Godhead. That is quite a miracle. Just like the demons have organized society so that you will go to hell, similarly, Srila Prabhupada and his devotees have organized New Dwarka so you go back to Godhead. So you have to choose. How am I going to be agitated? How am I going to be stimulated? How am I going to be motivated? Where do I want to go? Each devotee should have some kind of career vision. What am I going to do with my life? How am I going to offer myself to Krishna? That's actually what your temple management is here for. They want to hear from you. That, how can I make progress back to Godhead? How can I organize my devotional service better? When you start to see your temple management in that way, then things start to click. They're here to help me go back to Godhead. What do I need to go back to Godhead? Does it say in Bhagavad Gita, to go back to Godhead, you have to believe in Krishna. Believe in Krishna and you'll be saved. No verse like that in the Gita. What does it say? If you want to go back to Godhead, it's only by devotional service. So we need to discriminate between like the card-carrying Hare Krishnas, well, there's great benefit in that, and those who want to render service. Devotional service is what it's all about. So therefore, when you have a temple in which all the devotees are constantly knocking on the president's door, I need service. Is my service good enough? I've got to go back to Godhead. Is there enough service for me? Could I be doing better? Then things become very lively. But when you become unfortunate and you view the temple management as just, oh, these guys are just here to give me a hard time. They're controlling everything. They have all the facility. When you start thinking like that, it means you've missed the point. The whole point is how to go back to Godhead. So therefore, you view the temple management in that way. Prabhus, help me go back to Godhead. I have to have devotional service. At the time of death, it's not a question of, did you believe in Krishna? Did you accept the Krishna idea?
No. Just because they thought he was Krishna. They were bashful about their conjugal symptoms. But then they studied him and saw...